Are you feeling overwhelmed by hormonal changes? If you're a woman, you're not alone. With over 1,000 hormone disruptors in our environment, it's no wonder things can feel out of balance. On top of that, natural changes like PMS, menopause, and other life stages can leave you feeling tired, irritable, and trapped in a constant battle with your body. But here's the good news. You don't have to suffer through it. Hormone Harmony by Happy Mammoth is here to help. This herbal formula fine-tunes your hormones, balancing estrogen, testosterone, and even stress hormones like cortisol, which can contribute to weight gain, racing thoughts, poor sleep, and more. With over 40,000 five-star reviews and a bottle selling every 24 seconds, the results speak for themselves. Ready to feel like yourself again? For a limited time, get 15% off your first order at happymammoth.com using code NEXTCHAPTER at checkout. Visit happymammoth.com today and get your old self back naturally.
Your old or broken phone can let you down when you need it most.
Perfect.
But at Verizon, trade in any old phone from our top brands and get the most for it, up to $2,000 in value, for an amazing new iPhone 16 Pro with Apple Intelligence and a new line on my plan, and iPad and Apple Watch Series 10. That's like a 3-for-1. And you can get it on any plan. At Verizon, trade in your old phone for a brand new iPhone 16 Pro, iPad, and Apple Watch. The other guys won't give you that. Visit Verizon.com today. Additional terms apply. Service plan required for Apple Watch and iPad. Up to $2,000 value based on iPhone, iPad, and Apple Watch.
Can we talk something else? Can we talk about something else?
Hello. Out there. Nineteen-year-old Cal Poly Tech student Kristen Denise Smart disappeared on May 25th of 1996. She was last seen being helped back to her dorm by fellow students following an off-campus party, where she ended up passed out on a neighbor's lawn at around 2 a.m. The search for Kristen would last over 20 years, with the case being solved fairly recently, in no small part due to the reach of a true crime podcast. But back then, when another Cal Poly Tech student went missing, again after a night of frat-style drinking, the two cases were naturally thought to be connected. San Luis Obispo authorities were quick to react while still under massive scrutiny due to the handling of the Kristen Smart disappearance. It seemed all hell was breaking loose when a third young woman, again a student, vanishes, making certain that a serial abductor, perhaps a serial killer, was on the prowl. Something not too unusual historically for these parts, where the infamous co-ed killer, Ed Kemper, had once cruised for chicks. Kristen Smart, it turns out, was not connected to the abductions that followed her own. In her case, rather than being stalked by a Mr. Krebs, she had been victim to an opportunistic, unassuming killer whom had walked Kristen home to her dorm, then raped, murdered, and disposed of her with the help of his father that night in a case that should have been solved swiftly, though that's not the story I'm prepared to tell today. For the infamous Kristen Smart case, I would humbly direct you to the excellent work of Your Own Backyard podcast. But first, before you go running there, let me do my thing here. Please. That thing where I solve nothing other than how to make a funny little title for a tale most terrible. Welcome to Dark Topic. I'm your host, Jack Luna. This is a true crime happening. Mr. Krebs. Rex Allen Krebs, later referred to as Mr. Krebs by his parole officer, had a disturbing criminal history that made him a quick suspect in the SLO abductions. SLO standing for San Luis Obispo, but SLO was also a word being used by the public at the time in describing the police response to the Kristen Smart case. The pressure was on in 1999 to get some answers on the disappearances of now not just one, but three young, pretty local girls. So when Mr. Krebs hit the radar, he was quickly netted and dragged in for questioning. He even looked a little like a crab, short, stocky, lightning quick and agile. Mr. Krabs of SpongeBob fame has a mustache, though that might be his nose on closer inspection. Anyways, Rex Krebs had a mustache himself. I'm sure he even got red in the face like a crab from time to time. Our Mr. Krebs not only had anger and impulse issues, but plenty of embarrassment in his life. And suddenly I'm embarrassed naming this episode after a character from SpongeBob when it's about brutal murder and rape. But anyways, he was unusually short, this king, and he was crowned with a deep horseshoe balding pattern. The mustache and muscles helped a little for his appearance. Rex Krebs combated his God-given deficiencies by pumping a shitload of iron and growing out a luxurious lip toupee. A flavor saver is the term I heard used by a pervert in a bar one night. He had a mustache. An alternate title for this episode was The Circus Strongman, as that's exactly what Rex Krebs looked like. But the title Mr. Krebs made me laugh, so here we are, having a lot of fun. I'll tell you who wasn't having fun. Rex Allen Krebs. During his childhood. Born January 28, 1966, in the wilds of Sandpoint, Idaho, Krebs grew up rough. His mom and dad drank a lot, which led to them fighting a lot over their financial struggles, and a young Rex Krebs often found solace out in the woods, or when there was nowhere to run, huddled up with his siblings in their room, clamping their hands over each other's ears, hoping to weather the storm of screams and violence that so often rolled through the Krebs kitchen and living area. I should mention that Rex had a younger sister who suffered from a disability of some sort, and this only made things more stressful in the home. Rex's dad apparently enjoyed making fun of the little girl, mocking her affliction openly like a schoolyard bully. Eventually, the parents split up, but this only welcomed fresh hell for the nearly adolescent Rex Krebs. A stepfather entered the picture and soon took up where his father had left off, abusing the mother and going so far as to abuse Rex himself. The boy, like I said, grew up rough. He resembled his father, which annoyed the new man of the house, and young Rex was often humiliated. Apparently, he had an issue with shitting his pants, so stepdad figured the way to remedy this would be to make Rex wear his shitty underwear on his head whenever he soiled them, which makes me laugh. And it shouldn't, because this is a child. Rex was forced to sit on his little sister's potty as punishment for hours. He was also sent to school wearing a diaper, which caused the little guy great stress and brought a lot of grief from his peers, as you can imagine. By grade 5, Rex's mom was fed up with the stress of having him around her new man and sent him off to live with his father, who was staying on a farm. Rex had to change schools as a result, and this made life even more miserable, as he didn't have much in a change of clothes and was picked on for his disheveled appearance to the point of him becoming enraged and fed up with his peers. Young Rex Krebs began fighting back, which led him to the principal's office most days. Rex enjoyed the attention he got from a support system there and would intentionally get sent to the office to spend time in a stable environment, which is quite sad. At the age of 13, Rex was caught jerking off in the bedroom of a young woman in his neighborhood. Nothing really came from this. At age 14, Rex's father caught him making an obscene phone call to a local woman and beat the living shit out of him as punishment. Rex is told that if he doesn't straighten out, he'll be sent to a mental hospital. And that's exactly what happens after an incident at age 15 where Rex Krebs nearly derails a train after having laid scrap metal on a local stretch of track. Rex, as promised by his father, is dumped at an asylum. Fortunately for him, the doctors there soon deduce that the young man is only suffering from a bad attitude due to a terrible upbringing. And because his parents have now washed their hands of the boy, Rex is sent to a facility known as the Idaho Youth Ranch, where by all accounts he fares well. He completes high school through the system. In 1984, having just turned 18, Rex assaults a 12-year-old girl after drunkenly following her out of an arcade. He chased the girl over an embankment where she fell and hit her head on a rock. When Rex saw her injury, he snapped out of his lustful pursuit and helped the girl to safety. This was typical of Rex Krebs in his early years. He displayed poor impulse control and often became extremely apologetic and emotional upon being reprimanded for his strange actions. The 12-year-old reported the incident, and 18-year-old Rex ended up celebrating his perceived transition to adulthood not by raping a little girl as planned, but by spending 36 days of a 3-month sentence in the county jail for the failed attempt instead. But now he knew what he wanted. He wanted to rape young girls and get away with it. In 1987, Rex Krebs moved to California, where he finally managed the first part after having spent the preceding years locked up in Idaho's Cottonwood Prison for a grand theft auto charge. Krebs would later brag of how he stole the car to intentionally be put in the prison, where he hunted down and killed an inmate whom had raped and murdered an ex-girlfriend of his. This is a lie. Krebs had never had a girlfriend to this point, though he believed this story would help get him one once he landed in California. It didn't help at all. He tried this pickup lie on a girl he worked at a Wendy's with, and all it did was turn her off. For some reason. Bitch. Krebs no doubt thought, what is wrong with these stuck-up bitches? Well, if they wouldn't join him, he'd have to beat them. As the saying for such men goes. So Krebs, he went to California to live with his mother. She had a new husband who didn't mind Krebs, and even set up a space for the now hardened criminal in a loft above their garage. On May 24th of 1987, Rex Krebs followed a 24-year-old woman home from a bar. The young woman had been keeping her roommate company at the lounge she worked at, but had decided to walk home alone while her friend performed closing duties. Once home, she went to bed. Rex Krebs waited outside until the girl fell asleep, then broke into the house. Krebs, being so small, could slip in through windows that his victims had thought would be safe to keep open for airflow. In this case, Krebs woke the girl up with a hand slapped over her mouth. He then tied her up, cut her clothes off with a knife, and raped her. The girl's roommate returned home from work during the vicious attack. Her car was quite loud, having a broken muffler, and Krebs fled upon hearing it pull into the driveway. But not before saying this to his bound and naked victim, quote, have a nice day. Unfortunately, it was night, and the room had been kept too dark for the girl to give a description of Mr. Krebs. Rex Krebs is working for a door and supply company by this time and has been using the job to try and pick up women through it. He has a card with his name and number on it that he hands out to any single woman he comes across, offering his services for free. One night, not long after his first known attack, Rex breaks into a single mother's house whom he had recently given his card. Again, he gets the jump on his victim while she's asleep, this time holding a screwdriver to her eye while clamping his hand over the mouth. What Rex didn't anticipate was for his victim's little girl to be in bed beside her. The girl wakes up and begins screaming, crying, and Rex demands for the mother to shut her child up, or else. The mother gets her little girl quiet and tells her to hide under the bed. Then, Rex Krebs feels comfortable enough to begin his sexual assault. The woman begs for her attacker to please move this to another room, so that her daughter doesn't have to be present. Mr. Krebs, ever the gentleman, agrees to this arrangement, but as they leave the room, his target grabs at his hunting knife, sheathed on his belt, and a scramble for control of the situation spills into the darkened hallway. Rex slams the woman's head off the walls and badly damages her finger in an attempt to bite it off, but the desperate woman manages to get out her front door and is screaming for help as Rex Krebs skitters away, unseen, into the murky depths of the warm California night. Well, not completely unseen. A witness will share with responding officers that they saw a bald guy jump into a Volkswagen Bug and drive off. Krebs had not only been seen making his escape, but he had left behind his knife and a hat he'd been wearing, both of these lost during the scuffle. Something else he'd left behind was his business card, which the victim still had, and was quick to share, as possibly belonging to that of her assailant, whom she didn't see in the dark, but felt could have been the same creep who had offered free garage door repairs. A call comes in to the responding officers of a disturbance at a local 7-Eleven. Some drunk is causing a scene there and has scratches all over his face. This could be their man, so the cops rush to the 7-Eleven and take into custody a guy who could easily have had this pinned on him had it not been for Rex leaving so many clues at the crime scene. Luckily for this slurpy machine smack and jerk off, the business card of Krebs is followed up on, and it's discovered that Rex Krebs owns a Volkswagen Bug, and that he, too, is covered in scratches. The little girl involved in this crime was able to positively ID Krebs. She had gotten a better look than her mother had, apparently, and when faced with the fact that a little girl had pointed him out, Rex, as was his custom when faced with repercussions for his actions, began to cry. You know how in SpongeBob, Mr. Krabs cries over money? Well, like that. But in this case being caught for rape, is why Mr. Krebs is crying. Mr. Krebs, it seemed, had a heart, but those who knew him would tell you that it was all self-serving. He felt bad, yes, and he couldn't help but begin to cry, true, but he only felt bad, and those tears were only for himself. Crocodile tears, I think they called them. Rex Krebs, in his emotional state, admits to the previous break-in and assault perpetrated during the Have a Good Day case. He claims that the young woman had looked through him earlier that night at the bar, and it had enraged him. It had made him feel like nothing. Rex Krebs gets filed away in the California penal system for 20 years and is forgotten. That is until his early 30s, when he's early released, only a decade into the sentence. Krebs is a good boy now. He has learned his lesson. Don't leave a living witness. November 12th, 1988. Rex Krebs, who has recently got himself a real-life girlfriend, is a little stressed out. She's pregnant, and he's just barely back on his feet following prison. Krebs has managed to secure work at a lumber yard, but he's not nearly ready to be a family guy. The stress has led him to getting drunk this evening, and when Krebs gets drunk, admittedly, he becomes a bit of a monster. Something about his mother ditching him at his abusive father's house as a kid, something about being short and having been teased by women his whole life for it, makes him a little dangerous with liquor. As part of his parole restrictions, he's not allowed to drink alcohol. He's not allowed to stalk women for the purpose of abducting, raping, then killing them either, but by midnight he's doing that too. Krebs is cruising around San Luis Obispo in his blue Ford Ranger pickup truck when he spots a pretty young girl walking alone through the trees of a darkened sidewalk around 11:30 p.m. This is 20-year-old Cal Poly Tech student Rachel Newhouse, 5'6", 120 pounds, white, brown hair and eyes. That is how her missing poster will soon describe her.
Your old or broken phone can let you down when you need it most.
Perfect.
But at Verizon, trade in any old phone from our top brands and get the most for it, up to $2,000 in value, for an amazing new iPhone 16 Pro with Apple Intelligence and a new line on my plan, and iPad and Apple Watch Series 10. That's like a 3-for-1. And you can get it on any plan. At Verizon, trade in your old phone for a brand new iPhone 16 Pro, iPad, and Apple Watch. The other guys won't give you that. Visit Verizon.com today. Additional terms apply. Service plan required for Apple Watch and iPad. Up to $2,000 value based on iPhone, iPad, and Apple Watch.
All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to leave up holiday decorations year-round. Others have the need to use their garage as practice space for their new metal band. And because each homeowner has unique needs, GEICO helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with GEICO.
Rachel is walking home after an argument with her friend at the restaurant Tortilla Flats. They've been drinking margaritas. Rachel became upset enough to leave alone rather than take a ride home. Now she is in the sights of a recently released sex offender who has grand plans of getting away with it this time. Krebs speeds up the street to find a good spot for ambush. The plan is to beat the consciousness out of the girl, then drive her back to his newly acquired rental house, a place he acquired out in Davis Canyon, far from prying eyes and perfect for a predator with his predilections. Put on your mask, Rex. Right. He grabs his hit kit, retrieves a Halloween mask, some rope, and a replica pistol. Well, it's a BB gun. Of course, he's not allowed to have anything that resembles a real firearm, but Krebs is breaking all the rules tonight. He spots the rusty, dimly lit Jenny Street Bridge, and later will claim that, quote, something told me that she'd use that bridge, end quote. Yeah, that something is called common sense, Rex. She's walking directly towards it. But anyways, park the truck at the foot of the stairs on the far side of the bridge, put on the fucking mask, get on the bridge, and act natural. That's the plan. When Rachel gets about halfway across the ominous Jenny Bridge, her heart no doubt sinks as she spots a dark figure looking out on the quiet street below while leaned against the far side railing. When she gets within a few feet, Krebs turns to her, face sheathed, as the Grim Reaper. Rachel likely screams as the little pit bull of a man attacks, punching Rachel in the face, then pouncing on her as she hits the concrete, where Krebs smashes her head to the ground until the girl goes limp. Krebs then grabs her by the hair and drags her down the stairs, where he quickly tosses her into the back seat of his truck, then drives off. Blood is left splattered all over the bridge. The next morning, those who notice it deduce that a poor bunny, or a squirrel, must have been killed here by a predator, then dragged off, which is close. Rachel isn't dead when Krebs gets in the back seat to tie her up. He has driven about 200 yards down an abandoned stretch of railway before getting to work securing the bleeding, moaning girl properly. Improperly. Krebs ties Rachel up, then shoves his hand down her pants and rips her panties clean off. He uses the torn garment as a gag, and then he hops back in the driver's seat. The abduction takes a winding route through the hills and along a rarely used dirt road. Krebs, as I mentioned, is renting a house deep in a desolate canyon where he enjoys an off-grid lifestyle. Really, he's just one step away from homelessness. The place he's living in looks like a shipwreck. It has no electricity or running water, just stuck up there in the hills. There is an abandoned cabin along the route to the Krebs homestead, and this is where he decides to do it. Krebs hauls Rachel from the truck and into the dilapidated cabin, where, maybe by candlelight, he brutally assaults the girl. The girl. I hate saying that. 20-year-old Rachel Newhouse. A straight-A student. A sister, a daughter, who had just been out with friends partying, blowing off some steam, enjoying maybe two or three more margaritas than she normally would before deciding to walk home alone. This girl is left for dead once Rex Krebs is finished with her. He ties her up in such a way that her legs, once relaxed, will tighten the rope around her neck and cause her to strangle. Krebs then drives home and takes a nap. When he returns in the morning, the girl is dead. He hauls her out to a spot on a hill where he'd been chopping firewood. Rachel is buried here. Krebs uses hog wire in the process to deter animals from digging her up. And if it wasn't for the mistakes made with the next girl, judging by the location of photos I've seen of this burial location, I believe Rachel Newhouse would still be there today. A heap of bone and rope, a tattered outfit from a night out in the late 90s, a secret well kept like so many out there, just beneath the surface. Krebs manages to keep his head down until March 11th of 1999, 4 months since the well-publicized Rachel Newhouse vanishing. He has been stalking a young woman of the exact height and weight as Rachel had been. Seeing them in photos side by side, they truly could be sisters. Andrea Lynn Crawford, 21, 5'6", 120 pounds, white, blonde with green eyes, is what the missing poster will soon read as. Andrea had dreams of becoming an interior designer and was attending college in San Luis Obispo with plans of transferring to Cal Poly Tech. Those plans would be interrupted when, after a few days of drunkenly leering at her at night through her windows, Rex Krebs decides to break in and take her. Andrea lived in a duplex with her cat. She was working at a mechanic shop to make ends meet and was in close contact with her mother, her family. Rex saw the young woman only as a toy to be taken. He tried the door, then the windows, but found them all locked. Inside, Andrea had just drifted off to sleep. She had been chatting on the phone until 2 a.m. Rex Krebs had been patient, but now he wants in. He wants what he believes is his, for his efforts. Down in the basement is where Andrea had been keeping her cat. The cat had recently had surgery, so that was a spot where the feline could safely recover without getting injured, prowling the home all night. Speaking of prowlers, she was well aware that they could be in the area. She knew, likely, of the Rachel Newhouse disappearance. The only window she left open was a small one for the basement bathroom. Too small, Andrea must have thought, for an intruder to crawl in through. So she left it open a crack for airflow for the cat. Rex finds this lone weakness. Because of his small size, he thinks this might be his entry point, but he can't fit at first. Because he's so motivated, though, Krebs squeezes himself through, cracking his ribs with the effort. But eventually he is gingerly lowering himself into the bathtub below. Upstairs, Andrea is awoken by the mewls of her cat and the bumping around that Krebs cannot stifle. She gets up to investigate, wearing only a t-shirt and panties. This next part is straight from a horror movie, and I know that's overused, but not misused on my part here. Rex Allen Krebs, wearing pantyhose over his head, likely hears Andrea coming downstairs. He is in the tub, and I have to imagine he's behind the shower curtain. In fact, in recreations of the crime, that's exactly how this scene is depicted. When Andrea enters the bathroom, Krebs jumps out and begins punching the girl in the head. He pounds on her until she's out, then ties her up with rope and gags her with duct tape. I failed to mention that Rex has his hit kit with him, as was the case with Rachel Newhouse. Krebs then goes through the house looking for keepsakes. He takes a Korn CD, a George Strait album, and of particular interest, he takes a miniature Magic 8-Ball keychain. Krebs is progressing into a hobbyist here. There is more to this than just rape. He's enjoying the whole process, the little things. And when he hears Andrea start to stir downstairs, it's likely difficult to pull away from his collecting to collect the main item, the girl, whom he blinds with a pillowcase over the head, then hauls her out to his truck that's waiting in the shadows. There are no witnesses. Krebs peels the pantyhose from his face, not worried that his victim will see him with the pillowcase strapped around her head. His captive he takes out to the same cabin he'd used for the last girl, whom he now knew through the newspapers as Rachel Newhouse. This fresh girl he'd surely get to know better in the morning. It's late. He's exhausted. Krebs makes sure Andrea is sufficiently secured, bound, gagged, and beaten, then goes home to rest. It's around 4 a.m. Early the next day, he's up chopping wood. There is a neighbor who drives by at this time, and he wants her to see him as part of a future alibi if needed. Who would be out chopping wood when they could be sexually assaulting a recently abducted co-ed? That is what he eventually spends the day doing. Krebs retrieves Andrea from the cabin and brings her to his shack. There, he rapes the girl in every way imaginable for hours, taking breaks only to get a drink or to take a nap. During one such nap, Andrea sees her chance to escape. Unfortunately, she can't literally see as she is legally blind without her glasses. And as she tries to creep downstairs from Rex's bedroom, Andrea stumbles, waking Rex Krebs from his drunken slumber on the living room couch. Andrea makes a break for the door but is tackled, and Krebs strangles her to death right there on the floor with his bare hands. Krebs then digs a shallow grave right outside his home, in view from his window, and buries the girl with hog wire in a thin layer of soil, thin in comparison to what he'd covered Rachel with up on the hill. That had been a 6-foot hole, and in a much more inconspicuous spot. After only 2 murders, Rex Krebs feels he's invincible. This is too easy. He sees no reason for anyone to suspect him to be responsible for the abductions that residents of San Luis Obispo are losing their minds over. It's scary, the way these girls had vanished. In the case of Rachel Newhouse, there only had been a blood trail on the bridge, dying out on the street, indicating she had been driven away. In the case of Andrea Crawford, however, there was a little bit more to go on, and it would be the mini Magic 8-Ball keychain that in the end would decide the killer's fate. David Zaragoza, a parole agent in charge of looking over recently released inmates with worrying case histories and a high chance of recidivism, did his job well. When the parole agent read about the Andrea Crawford abduction in the Tribune newspaper, there was a small detail that stood out large to him. The small bathroom window that had been used to gain entry. Agent Zaragoza recalls that one of his seemingly star parolees, a charming 30-something fella with a big personality, muscles, and mustache, had in his past used small bathroom windows to get at the women he wished to rape. Mr. Krebs, as Zaragoza referred to Rex, was paid a visit by his parole officer who came to his home under the guise of obtaining a urine sample. Zaragoza liked Mr. Krebs. The recent parolee seemed to be doing everything right. He'd gained employment at a lumber yard and had been named Employee of the Month soon after. He'd secured a residence, had managed to get into what seemed to be a healthy relationship, and was soon expecting to be a father. Agent Zaragoza felt it strange that he wasn't living with this woman, but he didn't ask too many questions of the man. He thought so highly of Mr. Krebs until he'd read of the bathroom break-in. Had no reason to suspect Mr. Krebs of being anything but a reforming ex-convict with a disturbing history that he was motivated to gain redemption over. But it seems now, as Mr. Krebs struggles to take a piss in a cup for the agent, that maybe Rex Krebs is a bad guy still. Maybe the known violent rapist has been putting on a good guy act so that he could do more bad guy stuff. Rex is favoring his ribs. When Zaragoza asks what happened to them, the killer claims that he had fallen while working on the house. Agent Zaragoza, as I mentioned, is good at his job. He notices that Mr. Krebs has no bruising or scratches on his arms that would have come with such a spill. He also notices, with a glance around the shithole Rex dares call his ranch, that there is a BB gun that looks pretty real on the counter. Bingo, bango. Hey, Rex. No more Mr. Krebs. I'm placing you under arrest for violating your parole. Rex Krebs begins to cry, but the agent is on to these tricks. There will be no mercy. Krebs is brought in to be booked, and his little house in the canyon is soon being scoured through for anything that might connect him to the slow abductions. It happens fast. Andrea's 8-ball is found in a wooden treasure box. Then a seat is found that Rex had removed from his truck. It's spotted under the house. Upon further examination, and after being brought into the lab, this seat is realized to be spotted itself with DNA. That of Rachel Newhouse. Rex Krebs is lightly interrogated in the weeks preceding the DNA evidence being found on the removed jump seat of his beloved blue Ford Ranger pickup truck. Detective Hobson, who has been buttering Krebs up until this point and suffering through Rex's performances as a jovial, aw shucks, why me, Captain, type, confronts Rex with the Magic 8-Ball first. Krebs claims he had found it in the yard while in prison. Okay, well, did you find this Korn CD, this George Strait album, out in the yard too, Rex? Krebs begins to tighten up a little, but he knows it's not enough. They're going to need something a little more damning. Rex, we got the DNA from your jump seat. It's that of Rachel Newhouse. What about that? Did you find that in the yard? All right, well, fuck, that did it. Rex, formerly peppy and playful, sitting there in his prison jumpsuit with hand and ankle chains jingling as he bounced around, puts his head down now and seems to turn to stone. He appears like a crab, wanting to retreat into himself, eyeballs peeking out worriedly. He sits prone like a scorned child. He begins to weep. Are you responsible for the disappearance of either one of these girls? Hobson asks. Are we going to find either girl alive, Rex? Rex Krebs is frozen, but with a little time under the heat of the hanging question, he thaws and begins shaking his head, soon whispering the word, no. No, Rex. Well, can we find them at all then? Krebs takes detectives out to the burial sites at his so-called ranch, after having enjoyed a requested lunch, on the afternoon of April 22nd, 1999. He appears proud of his rental property. Yeah, Rex, it sure is nice out here. You weren't lying. Now where should we dig? In May of 2001, Rex Krebs is convicted on 2 counts of first-degree murder. He is sentenced to 166 years with a side of 2 death sentences that haven't yet been served. He awaits those death sentences in San Quentin Prison, from what I can tell. And there's not a lot of info on Mr. Krebs as of late, so I thought I'd bring him up. I assume he's on his best behavior. Hopefully not too good. Because you never know. Thank you for listening. For exclusives, check out Patreon or Apple Plus, where Dark Topic has a life of its own. Until next time. Keep those eyes cocked, those doors locked, and stay paranoid.
Your old or broken phone can let you down when you need it most.
Perfect.
But at Verizon, trade in any old phone from our top brands and get the most for it, up to $2,000 in value, for an amazing new iPhone 16 Pro with Apple Intelligence and a new line on my plan, and iPad and Apple Watch Series 10. That's like a 3-for-1. And you can get it on any plan. At Verizon, trade in your old phone for a brand new iPhone 16 Pro, iPad, and Apple Watch. The other guys won't give you that. Visit Verizon.com today. Additional terms apply. Service plan required for Apple Watch and iPad. Up to $2,000 value based on iPhone, iPad, and Apple Watch.
All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to paint their door a vibrant shade of blue. Others have the need to decorate their bathroom with fish, anchors, and other nautical items. And because each homeowner has unique needs, GEICO helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with GEICO.